Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network. Tracy, that's where we are now.
That's where we are, dude.
Joined by Tracy Pearson today, here Friday. It's a beautiful day, 8:30 in the morning when we're recording. We got a lot to talk about today, Tracy. A lot.
We have a ton to talk about, Dave.
So many things.
There and actually is a lot going on.
We're not kidding this time. Women's basketball is in the Sweet 16. They play later today against Minnesota. If they win, they more than likely play LSU in the Elite Eight. We're going to talk about that. We got to talk about men's basketball. Roster building for next year has begun in earnest. The first stage of the process, retaining players, is going on this week. And then the next stage, acquiring transfers and filling this thing out so that it is a better team than next year, will begin in earnest. Well, that's all. We're all friends here, right? It's already begun. But, well, it begins in earnest when the portal opens on April 7th. And then we need to spend the balance of our time, the rest of our time, the most of our time, previewing spring football. Bob Chesney's first spring as the UCLA head coach begins next Thursday. Just around the corner now. So we got a lot to discuss, Tracy. But before we start, I do want to reiterate for everyone. Right now, Bruin Report Online, we are at On3 now. We were at 247. We are at On3 now. We've been here for about a month. You out there, you who are listening, you can get access to Bro right now for $1 for the next 5 months. That means you'll get all the information on the transfer portal, all the information on this basketball roster build, all the information on women's basketball's pursuit of a national championship, and all the information about spring football recruiting during this heavy football recruiting season through the end of June, summer workouts, most of fall camp, all of that. You will get access to everything we write. You will also get access to our message boards to talk about all of it. And it's for $1. $1.
Not a dollar a month.
No, $1 for the next 5 months. That's crazy talk. So there's no excuse. There's no excuse now. You must jump in. The water's fine.
All right. I think everyone is jumping in, David. It's just a matter of awareness. I think there are a lot of people out there that still haven't.
And that's why I'm beating them over the head right now.
Yeah, why I'm saying this is all of you out there who have friends who, you know, subscribe to Bro, please maybe do us a favor and just reach out in a text and say, hey, I just want to make sure y'all know that Bruin Report Online has moved on three, because I know a lot of you must have some stragglers out there that might not be aware that we moved, and you are our best marketing tool.
You are. We love you.
We truly do.
I've gotten honestly,
more enamored of all you bros.
So many of you have come over.
I've fallen back in love.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful
28 thing. Years into our relationship.
I know. It's rekindled. You should renew your vows with the bros.
we should write some vows. That'd be great.
All right. Well, we do have a lot to talk about. So let's start with the team that's still playing, baby. Let's start with women's basketball. They take on Minnesota later today. Minnesota, they played them earlier in the year.
It was a long time ago, January.
And Minnesota was missing one of its key players at the time. And UCLA went in there and really beat them up pretty good. It was at Minnesota. Bruins won, 76 to 58. So, Different complexion now. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a closer game. The Bart Torvik numbers have it as a 72-59 game. Could easily be the case. Minnesota, since that first game, they've played generally better basketball. They went on, after losing to UCLA and then they lost to Washington, they went on a 9-game winning streak soon thereafter, and they beat some real teams in there. I mean, they beat Iowa, they beat Ohio State, they beat Nebraska. So they're not as bad as they showed in that game in mid-January. But UCLA obviously is on a different level from pretty much everybody else in women's college basketball. So I would be very surprised if UCLA doesn't win this one by double digits, but I wouldn't be going into this one expecting UCLA to win by 30 plus. That, yeah, I think would be foolish.
I remember this game because it's hard to remember some of them because they blew out so many people. And I thought, if I remember correctly, Kiki Rice played really well, but I was kind of disappointed in the rest of the team's play overall, I think. And I thought Minnesota, without a man down, played them pretty tough. So there's that. And then in watching UCLA so far in the tournament, Dave, what would you come away with against Cal Baptist? It took them a while to get going, and then they went on like a 40 to nothing run, something like that.
They did. So the Cal Baptist game was classic. Like, if you've watched the men's tournament a bunch over the years, it was classic one seed behavior, which is, we're not taking this game seriously. As soon as we do, we're going to wipe the floor with them, which is what happened. But it took them, you know, quarter and a half or whatever to take them seriously.
And then Oklahoma State, you know, they went up by about 25 and then they kind of coasted and they let Oklahoma State in. I mean, I think they brought it down to within a single digit a couple of times. So I'm a big advocate for this team. I haven't been in the two games, and it's only been two games, and they're a number one seed. And like you said, you know, you're a number one seed. You can fall into some things playing a 16 seed and an 8 seed. But I haven't been as impressed as I wanted to be so far in the first two games. Yeah. So I think it's going to be one of two things. UCLA decides to really start playing and they blow them by 25. Or they stay at the same level they've been that we've seen. And Minnesota, I think, plays them kind of tough. Is kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be like, 10 to 12 point win would not be shocking to me. So it'll be interesting. They have the capability of blowing this team out. But they also, you know, the scenario that's hard to imagine is the one where UCLA loses this game. Yeah, I mean, if they continue to play kind of the way they have, where it's not, I won't say it was bad. I mean, they beat up on Oklahoma State. I mean, the final score was not close. And they, you know, obviously annihilated Cal Baptist. Minnesota's better than those two teams, though. So if they play the same level that they did against Oklahoma State, then yeah, 10-point win sounds about right.
And our friend Tracy McDonald has a blowout, 76-52. So
Tracy McDonald's a believer.
You're getting all three different versions, yes, of what is gonna happen. So there you go. We give you a full perspective.
We run the full gamut.
Yeah.
The more interesting thing is if and when UCLA wins this game, it sets up for a return of the Ben Bulch Classic, maybe. UCLA, LSU.
I'd really like this team to stop playing LSU.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Sorry, people from Louisiana. I don't like your women's basketball program. I really don't.
No.
I don't like the coach. The players before I thought were, I think they just talked a lot of trash and I don't like this program. And here we are again. Now, why, Dave, would you call it the Ben Bulch annual event?
Oh, you know, some things from the past.
You mean to the point that if Ben goes to this game, he's going to be in disguise?
Potentially. He might have to wear a mustache and glasses. I mean, LSU is really good. They're in that echelon of teams that if things break right, have the potential to, you know, give the top teams some trouble. They're fifth in Torvik. And they, unlike UCLA to an extent, they've annihilated their first two opponents in the tournament. They beat Jacksonville by, it's hard to even do the math at this point, but I believe that is 58 points. They doubled them up. And they beat Texas Tech by 54 points in the second round. They do have to play Duke, and Duke is another top team. Duke is a top 10 team in Torvik. So we'll see which one of them emerges. But LSU is heavily favored in this game.
Here's an instance when you are, this might, I don't know, this could be a first, where you are rooting for Duke in something.
Yeah, Duke, Duke and LSU have already played this year. It was not a pretty game for Duke. They lost by 16 at home.
Yeah.
Now, Duke figured some things out after that. They might have gotten somebody back from injury. I don't know anything about Duke basketball this year or women's basketball this year.
I'd be so impressed if you did.
Yeah. But they were 3-6 at that point. That was in early December, and they've finished the year 26-8. So they've only lost twice since that game. But the ACC isn't very good. So
Warren
anyway,
Betts is coming off like a career game, 35 points, which is a really good sign. There are three signs for this team. Lauren Betts is playing well. They're hitting their threes, and there's intensity on defense. I'd throw in the turnovers as a sign, but they've been so good this year, it just doesn't happen that much. But you can really tell when they're playing intense defense and they're not, like the first half against Cal Baptist. So that's a good sign right there that I think she scored like 35, something like that.
Yeah, agreed. So should be another fun weekend of basketball. So should UCLA win today, they will play again on Sunday. And should they win that one, they will be making a return trip to the Final Four, which is obviously very exciting. And, you know, I think I want to say anything less than another Final Four appearance would be a very huge disappointment with this team. And obviously there's variance and vagaries of, you know, every sporting event. And so you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but does feel like it's kind of a must get to Final Four at minimum. You got to get that rematch with UConn, right? Got to test yourself again.
I think right now, if UCLA doesn't play UConn in the final, it's kind of, that's what this whole season has been pointing to. They're clearly the two best teams. South Carolina ain't bad, but two best teams in women's college basketball, been compared all year. We did the comparison thinking UCLA should have the number one overall seed. It would be a disappointment to me. I'm saying that and it's true, but I wouldn't mind seeing UConn get knocked off before that.
That would be lovely, actually.
That would be lovely, but it'd be great to see it in see them matched up in the final.
Absolutely. All right. So that game's later today. Everybody should watch because there's only at most four more opportunities to watch this pretty incredible group. So get in there. The men's basketball team's roster building for next year continues apace. Basically, the season ended on Sunday, which I guess we can talk about a little bit. The season ended on Sunday against UConn in the round of 32. And then more or less immediately, UCLA had to pivot to retaining players, having end of season meetings, figuring out who's coming back, who isn't, because that's all important for determining who you need to attract in the transfer portal, who you need to acquire. So all of that stuff, there is no break. There is no time to, you know, sit and mourn the end of the season. You kind of just have to go to it. Do you want to sit and mourn the end of the season, Tracy? Anything on that UConn game? Do you even remember it? They lost by the same amount that Ben Howland lost to Florida in the national title game in 2006, if that helps.
You know, mourning kind of, there's a lot implied in there that I think it was, even though they played well in the last month, it was already, the mournfulness was already baked in.
It was baked in from December, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no mourning really for me. I mean, I'll confess, I find the transfer portal season the most entertaining right now. So I've been looking forward to that sucker for at least a month, if not longer.
Yeah.
There were games being played. Yes. Oh, okay.
Who knew?
As a preclude to the transfer portal.
Yeah. Let me tell everyone what kind of sick pervert that Tracy Pearson is, by the way. Because
I hope this stays within the sports context. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, well, thank you.
I'm sitting there. I'm like, okay, well, let's see. Do they have a chance to win these games? And Tracy's out here writing Here's some transfers that I think UCLA should target in the portal. Like last week, before they even entered the NCAA tournament.
And it got a lot of page views now, didn't it, Dave? Yes, it did. This is what this website is all based on. You can sell hope season. More than you can sell reality, especially when it comes to UCLA sports.
Tracy in October of like a 6-2 football season. Hey, here's some transfers on these other teams who might decide to enter the portal and could come to UCLA.
And most of the time that's inspired because everyone on the forum, those are the most viewed posts.
Y'all are sick perverts. So
I think it's sick and perverted that you're not sick and perverted. That's the thing.
I guess. So anyway, we've had a lot of stuff on the board this week, just kind of the blow by blow of what's happening. It's kind of a constant read of the tea leaves with who's coming back and who's leaving. We've got the latest on Trent Perry up on our site. So just so everyone knows, there's no official announcements yet. Nobody's officially announced, as of literally the time of recording, that they're coming back or leaving or anything. None of that stuff is like public consumption, but we've got a lot of it on Bro right now because we've got the inside scoop for you. So if you want to follow the blow by blow, jump on in.
Yeah. We go into depth. We wrote 3 stories over the course of 2 days when it comes to personnel retention and touching on, a little bit of transfer portal stuff. Go dig into those, guys, if you're listening to this, because we really give you all that detail. We get into the weeds on, and that's the kind of stuff y'all want. Overall, Dave, you would say, they're still going through the process of retaining players, determining who comes back. And it's just so different now because what you do is you meet with the player, you find out if he says he wants to come back, and you find out, the coach says, I want you to come back. And that's all well and good. They all hug and they tell each other how much then they go to their respective corners and the NIL discussions start. Oh, yeah. And that's where it can get kind of really crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. I don't envy anyone involved in that process, including good friends of ours, because it sounds nuts. Yeah. But I will say, I think the precept about Mick Cronin and UCLA having a pretty good chance of retaining its players pretty much every offseason, with one very notable and very tall exception last offseason. Generally speaking, they do a good job of it. And then it's a matter of evaluating those guys correctly and deciding whether or not you want to jettison any of them, because that's something that maybe hasn't happened as often as maybe some people might think it should. And then also, who you want to target in the transfer portal and evaluating those guys correctly. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see some of the things that UCLA needs next year. Something we've underscored is the need for athleticism, particularly at the wing, and the need for a post who's actually a playable high major post, not a playable high major floating big man, but an actual guy who can bang down low, rebound, play some defense, and also just create some gravity down low, like be a gravity well. We'll obviously have a bunch of details on who UCLA might be targeting to fill those spots. But one thing that we want to be cognizant of is whether or not we know some of the guys that UCLA might be targeting. The transfer portal isn't open yet. Most of the guys that will be entering the transfer portal have not yet entered it. And so public discussion of who UCLA will be targeting or who will be entering the transfer portal isn't necessarily in the best interests of UCLA actually getting these guys.
Yeah, there's so many reasons why to be cautious and conservative about the information you give up now. Yes, representatives of players can talk to representatives of programs. That is true. But then if it's out there that is happening before anyone goes in a portal, some people might find take away from that, that there was some tampering going on. So there's that. You would not want to contribute to that. Two, I know some of y'all just think UCLA shouldn't care what other programs think, but I can tell you every college staff thinks this, no matter who they are. They don't want it. As much information as cannot be shared out there is good for them. The more information that's shared, the harder it is for them to recruit. If other programs find out they're recruiting a guy, it only makes it worse. Not only could it clue someone into that player, there are very many instances in this NIL era where programs will specifically get into the recruitment just to try to drive up an NIL price.
Yeah, and it happened all with guys. It happened with guys who ended up on USO's roster last year at the end of the bench, where suddenly they cost a lot more than it was going to be.
So I'd say a good 30% more.
Yeah. So we're trying to be careful of that stuff.
And then one more, just to finish it off. We have a lot of sources, and a lot of sources are cluing us in and telling us this, and they're asking from their standpoint, hey, don't put this out there yet. This could, let's say it's a representative of a player, and they don't necessarily want this out yet for various reasons. The family doesn't want it out. They're not in the transfer portal yet. I mean, there's so many things. So we think it's just the really responsible thing to do, and we've always done it, and we're going to continue doing it.
Yeah. Like, for example, if like that player is playing on a team that's still playing big games, you know, maybe they don't want it out there that they are a target for, you know, certain schools.
Yeah.
So just, you know, FYI. But anyway, the upshot here is that, you know, we will be able to probably start teasing some stuff before the actual portal opens. And it'll be the straight scoop.
If it's public that someone, if he's a grad student, has gone in the portal, because you don't need to wait for the window if you're a grad student, or if it's released that this person intends to go into the portal, we will do everything we can to clear it with our sources to be able to report that UCLA is interested in that said player. So we will do everything we can to get it to you as soon as we can.
All right, so that's enough inside baseball talk for all of you. Main thing is UCLA is probably going to need an athletic wing, probably going to need a real post. There's other pieces as well. It could be determined by some of the player retention arguments that still go on, but based on what we know right now, those are two key priorities. Then they will need to fill out the bench significantly, potentially still try to upgrade some other spots in the starting lineup, but those two pieces are extremely key.
And this is, it's really hard for us to nail down, and we've tried hard, and I think we've done a pretty good job of what are the priorities going into the transfer portal, because this is a floating target. It can change, because there's the NIL, the roster, the dynamic between the players. You get this guy, you don't need this, changes all the time. Who they bring back will change. Let's just drop Sky Clark in here. Everyone knows he's waiting on a waiver for another year of eligibility. If he comes back, that changes. Well, let's put it this way. If he doesn't come back, that changes everything. You now need another starter level guard. To get a starter level guard, you're going to have to pay pretty decent money. Pay pretty decent money, that might affect the amount you can pay at other for players at other positions. So it changes all the time. It's very common that we hear someone looks like they're coming back, and then the next day, that's not the case. So what Dave is saying, generally, a post and a wing, and I think you can pretty much accept that those are going to be priorities, but it could be a shooting guard.
Yeah, that could definitely add to this menu very quickly.
It could be, and let's just not say a shooting guard. It might be a
lead combo guard.
Yeah. So it changes all the time. it also changed. It's just not by who's coming back, but the market out there, who's available.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say you, you know, you want to post in a wing and you could get a really good wing, like a high-end wing, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. You've got to think, well, we might just get a post who's not like an NBA player, but someone who can defend and rebound and a serviceable guy there. There's just so much dynamic going on and it's being figured out in real time. So as we give it to you and then you guys say, well, why not this? And we said, yeah, that could be it. It's changing all the time. So, but I think we can start with that, a wing in a post. Our priorities, and we're hoping UCLA's priorities, are rebounding, defending,
athleticism,
and for the post to be able to at least be a little bit of a shot deterrent.
Yeah, no, have some gravity in the middle, like suck in rebounds, block some shots. But yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago because again, it was not a shock to us what the priorities would be. And we had the rousing conversation about whether we would prioritize the post or the athletic wing. I went athletic wing, Tracy went post, but no doubt those are 1A and 1B in some order. And then, as Tracy pointed out, if things change with other situations, could also be another guard who might need to start. So there's a lot of moving parts right now. There's going to be increased clarity once there are public announcements about who is returning. We've got some pretty good ideas. Again, go on, bro. You can find kind of where things stand right now. We will probably have another update today, it would be my guess. But there's a lot that's going on right now with the roster as it stands.
And I could be 100% convinced to have an elite small forward who is a great defender and then a serviceable post who can at least defend the position, who... you know, it's not scoring 15 points a game, but just not necessarily a great offensive player, but rebounds and defends and can block some shots every once in a while. Because you really need, if this roster returns, like we've been, of the guys that will return, you need that lockdown defender out there. That's key, I think, to a good defense and key to a Mick Cronin defense and key to a Mick Cronin team. So without that, if you just have a scorer at the wing who can't defend and you look at the guys who are returning, you might just kind of be repeating what you saw last season.
It needs to be athleticism at the wing, athleticism that can defend and is willing to defend. We're 28 minutes into this thing, and we need to talk about some oblong ball, some of the pointy pigs.
Hand spheroid.
The hand spheroid. That is the football. UCLA will open up spring football next Thursday. I should say they will open practice. They will start practice. They will start practice next Thursday. Whether or not it's open, I think, is still TBD. They will begin practice next Thursday, the first practices of the Bob Chesney era. I'm writing these spring previews right now. Again, you can go on, bro, to find all of our unit by unit spring previews. We've already made our way entirely through the offense, and I'm about halfway through the defense now. And the big thing I'm consistently struck by is, one, how bad everything was last year when you really kind of hone in on it. And two, how much different everything is this spring. Like, just how many new guys there are to look at. And it seems like every time I write one of these things, I'm like, oh, wow, I'm most interested in this unit, or I'm most interested in this unit. But it's every single position group that we go through. It's like, wow, there's so much unknown here. And there's position groups where I'm struck by, I think they're going to be really quite good. Wide receiver, probably first and foremost. But honestly, I'm kind of talking myself into the edges too. And then there's ones where I'm just intrigued because I don't know what the answer is going to be. And that's defensive tackle. And then probably publishing later today, linebackers, where I really don't know what the what the complexion of this is going to look like and whether they're going to be able to make it work with the personnel they have. So I think there's a lot of really intriguing stuff, a lot of really intriguing things about this spring, you know, a week out from it right now.
My thing, it always comes back. Quarterback, wide receiver, secondary. Yeah. You know what? They could be good. Looks like they'll be good. The big thing to me, it's offensive line and defensive line, but I'd say defensive line is two and number one is offensive line. We've seen it. When has UCLA had a good team without a good offensive line? Has that ever happened? Ever? No. If someone can make that case, I'd be stunned.
I wouldn't say without a good offensive line, because I do think a lot of them had talent, but that 2013 team, they were starting a bunch of freshmen, and they ended up being pretty decent freshmen.
They ended up being pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Noel Mazzone's offense is the closest thing to something that was able to mitigate offensive line. I mean, Simon Goines was starting that first year, and he wasn't great. So, I agree with you in part. I was being pedantic.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. And there are, this is the offensive line is almost a complete mystery. Really. Eugene Brooks. I think we could put a little bit of trust in him that he's going to be good at left guard.
Correct.
Everything else, Dave. I mean, we've got like eight.
I feel pretty good about right guard.
Why?
It'll be one of the JMU guys and they're going to be fine.
See, though, in just that statement, we are making the speculation that they are going to be able to make that step up. There's just mystery to everything. I just don't think there's any mystery that Eugene Brooks isn't going to be good next year.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Eugene Brooks is a definite starter and also, like, potentially a, you know, I'm not going to say an all-conference performer, but he's going to be pretty good next year, too.
But answer me this. When you and I spoke with Bob Chesney, he made it a point to drop Julian Armella.
Yeah. So one thing I'll say, and this is a major credit to Bob, but I brought this up after that interview. He was willing to get into specifics about players without ever having seen them actually practice. It was all about like what they've done in their workouts and stuff. And I could see Julian Armella being really good in the workout room in that environment. And then, you know, Bob's extrapolating and I appreciate that about him, but like if I was being judicious and fair, I wouldn't hold him to anything that he was saying in that interview as it pertains to specific player evaluations. Cause a lot's, I would imagine, going to change in the first couple of weeks of spring when you see these guys actually like playing football.
But you should go back and listen. I mean, we did that interview a few weeks ago, right? It holds up to today. He talked a lot about the offseason workouts, who he was impressed with, talked about a lot of position groups going into spring. It's a great interview. I said at the time, still believe, one of the best March pieces of content we've ever done for football. So all because of Bob. But so much is dependent. You know, it was really encouraging. Was that I did a story on it. The returning snaps in the Big Ten, and UCLA has the most returning snaps among its offensive linemen, which is pretty amazing, actually. I mean, there's a lot of nuance there. You're bringing in a lot of guys that played a lot of snaps elsewhere, and some of them were pretty good, and some of them weren't necessarily. But you can always make the case that experience is key, especially at offensive line. And UCLA will have it. Now, there's a lot of more nuance there. They won't have it playing together. They won't have it with this offensive line coach. So there's a lot to learn. To me, the real guy to watch is Jordan Davis. I really want to see him plugged in at the starter at left tackle and then survive the first couple of weeks of spring practice that he's still lined up as a starter at spring. That means he definitively is the best guy there.
Yeah.
Instead of there being any kind of doubt.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I would say, so the one thing that leaves me with some optimism is, to your point, 11 of the 22 guys, first, there's 22 guys in this offensive line room. That's got to be the most from a numbers standpoint they've had in years. Two, 11 of them have starting experience, at least some starting experience. So there are, there's been a considerable number of snaps played by these guys. Yes, some of it's at lower levels. A lot, none of it is together, except for essentially Carter Swayze and Riley Rebel, and then on the other end, the guys who returned. But there are a lot of pieces here to work with that I'm. It would require a pretty heavy miss rate to not be able to churn out 5 to 7 guys who can play. That doesn't mean
you are. This is great. This is optimistic, Dave.
It's not that optimistic. I mean, if their hit rate is under 33%, we've got a problem.
We're talking UCLA's offensive line.
Yeah. The one I'm most concerned about actually is right tackle. Hall Schmidt was injured all of last year, basically, and then didn't grade out great as a starter the previous year. So I think that one's a bit more of a leap for me than really any of the other spots. I think they're going to have a competition at center. And I would reasonably expect if it's Sam Yoon, he will have fixed his snaps. I think Jordan Davis, you know, he'll be fine. I think the guards are going to be fine because they've got a lot of bodies. Right tackle is the one where I'm just, I don't know. I don't know.
Here's a wild card on that. If Jordan Davis is the left tackle, If Jalen Jeffers is healthy, and we've seen Jalen Jeffers from 2 seasons ago.
I'm not a big Jeffers guy.
He was a solid player. And I would say I would feel better about him potentially at right tackle than maybe the guys we have in our depth chart at the moment. But
bold.
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm talking about. This is there is a lot of mystery here.
Bold.
And I'm telling you, Bob Chesney also mentioned Sam Yoon, didn't he? Now he did.
Sam's got to figure out his snaps. And I think that actually, I brought this up last year. I literally just think it's a leverage issue where he is placing himself too far over the ball. He needs to be further back from the ball and he needs to swing his arm more. Because he was like, if you watch him, he's basically crouching on top of the ball. And then there's no arm movement. It's basically just a quick jerk of his hand, and it's not actually a full swing. So you're not getting any leverage on the ball, and so it's not going very fast.
If the snaps are fixed, are you okay with him? See, Dave.
He needs to get
stronger. Dave just tilted his head sideways.
He needs to get stronger. I mean, it's still he gets bowled over too often. But maybe. It depends on their other options. Derek Osman might be fine. You know, he's coming in from Harvard. Offensive line can translate from a lower level. It's not a perfect thing, but like I'm usually more confident in like an offensive lineman translating from a lower level than, I don't know, like a DB or a receiver. Like it just feels like the things that make a good offensive lineman can, you know, it's a lot of times it's intelligence, and then a lot of the times it's physical strength, which can be worked out in a weight room. Yes, okay. Some of it is genetic and some of it's being bigger and stronger and all that kind of stuff. But if you've already got the, you know, Derek Osman appears to have offensive line size. So, but anyway, I think there's going to be a few options at center, and I think there'll be a competition.
So take away from offensive line, Jordan Davis, if he steps up, Eugene Brooke at left tackle, Eugene Brooke at left guard. I was playing devils, but I agree with Dave. I think Riley Rebel, Carter Swayze have a good chance of winning a spot at guard, and that would be right guard if Eugene Brooks is at left guard. Sam Yoon, come on, he's going to be a redshirt senior. I think he's got to be at least serviceable at center. And then they, among all these candidates, they find someone to be serviceable at least at right tackle. So that's what we're looking for this spring. Dave, the other one, 1A concern, and you just got done writing the preview about or about defensive line.
I'm gonna say I got to divide it because edge. I'm not particularly concerned about edge.
Really? Let's talk about that first.
Sure. So they're adding. So okay.
Sure.
it's a relative lack of concern because last year's edge group was so bad that Sahir West by himself, and I think it's actually Sahir West by himself has more tackles for loss last year and more sacks last year than UCLA's entire edge group last season.
Caveat though,
hmm?
It was a G5 level competition, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to put it in perspective.
No, please.
I agree with you. And the reports we're getting that we're hearing is that he's got all the makings of being very good.
Correct.
So there you go.
Yeah. So that's that is kind of a key. So I think there are some reasonable reasons to wonder about certain things with the edge group, but basically you've got Zaire West, and then you've got a bunch of guys who have produced at a decent enough level already. And that's Aiden Gabara, who had, I think, 4 sacks last year for JMU. Ryan McCullough, who went healthy the last 2 years, I think had 5 sacks in 12 games or something like that. And you've got Dallin Hevea, who, again, it was a lower level, Utah Tech, but produced at a pretty high level in 12 games last season and is also a grown man. He's already been on a mission. Added to that, and this is where in this transfer portal era, we kind of lose sight of guys who are holdovers to an extent, and I find myself doing this, and then I have to check myself. We really liked Cole Cogshell as a prospect out of high school. He's now a year into the program. How's he going to look? But he has potential as an edge rusher. Juju Walls is back. The previous staff really liked him, and he played a lot last year. And Scott Taylor, who we have ensconced at the edge, he could end up playing linebacker. Juju Walls could as well. But we have him at edge. He played a ton last year. There's, again, it's kind of like the offensive line thing, except that West has more star power than anyone on that offensive line. There are so many bodies here who have either played already or who have the potential where they were higher, like Cole Cogshell, who was a higher level prospect, where I'm sitting there and I'm like, yeah, they're going to figure something out here. It's not going to be Leatu Latu and the Murphy twins, but I think edge is going to be fine. I don't think it's going to be a weakness the way it was last year. I think they're going to be able to generate some base pass rush, and it's not going to be this complete zero that it was last season.
I agree. I think the whole thing is Sahir West. You take him out of the equation, it suddenly kind of starts to look like last year. He's the star power. So he's the one that kind of takes it just on paper to the next level. So let's just say that's better or less concerning. I'm still concerned about interior defensive tackle.
Yes. Yes, this is the one where I don't know what the answer is going to be. I'm willing to pencil in Darold Dingohe as a potential starter. Willing to pencil that in. But he spent all of last year hurt. And yes, Rutgers liked him enough to pluck him from JMU. And yes, Rutgers liked him enough that he was in line to start last year. But he was hurt all of last year. Is he ready to start and be, the primary defensive tackle for a team? I don't know. And then you have Tyson Ford and Maxwell Roy. Tyson Ford is a former high-level prospect out of high school it really hasn't come together for him yet. He was kind of hurt at Notre Dame behind some other guys, then he was hurt at Cal behind some other guys. Is he ready to be fully healthy and, live up to his high school reputation? Maxwell Roy, I feel better about, if only on the Eugene Brooks corollary, where a guy who was a 4-star out of high school and then all he did was go to college and redshirt 1 year is probably still a pretty good player or a pretty good prospect. But we don't know. And he also had an injury last year. So there's those guys. And then there's AJ Fuimaiono, who Ekaika Malloy was really high on.
We always go back to that.
But
that's all we got.
I've never really seen it. I've never really seen that play out. You got Ashton Sanders, who played a little bit last year. Maybe he steps up a little bit, but there are way, way, way more question marks about defensive tackle than there are on the edge or at offensive line. Like I think they might have to get creative. They might have to bring edges over. They might have to put Sahir West at, you know, the three tech at different points. Like I think there's going to have to be something very creative happening here, unless Maxwell Roy and Darold end up being absolute studs. But even then, you need a minimum four and probably five defensive tackles to have a real rotation there.
Someone's got to step up.
Yeah.
And go way multiple, beyond what we're
multiple
expecting.
Multiple someones have to step up.
I'll just say just one. Yeah, no, multiple. But I'd be almost happy if between Ford Roy, Gavin Blum, someone steps up and is really good. And they did, you know, the staff did an amazing job at evaluation and projected this guy. And he is a clear starter and flashes in an ability this spring. That would make me happy. And it's why, Dave, because if you go right up the middle of the defense, the next biggest concern is linebacker.
That's right. This is another area where UCLA's just got more questions than answers right now. And, you know, that's normal. But also if you're looking for run defense, you want your linebackers and defensive tackles to be known things. And right now, those are the biggest unknowns on this defense. But what we're expecting going into this year, Samuel Mosigo, who was not a starter at Oklahoma, being the starter at Mike and being like, he's got to be the guy. Can he do that? There are a few other transfers, but I mean, Drew Spinagotti is more of like, how would I describe him? He's, I don't want to say Christian Taylor-esque, because that would imply he's a starter. And that was more a function of Carl Durrell's team, but like, he's a lower level guy who's going to play hard, and he's going to play within the system, and he's going to do the right stuff, and he's going to probably make an impact on special teams, but probably not an ideal starter at this level. He's going to be a key part of this this depth chart. Anthony Saka, who was at Notre Dame, some people think he's destined to be an edge. He's probably going to be in this linebacker depth chart. Can he play? Don't know. So the holdovers here, I think, are the ones who have to really step up. If I'm looking at this judiciously, Jalen Woods is now in his fifth year of college football. He's got to step up and into being a sure, very good starter. And Donovan Pilott, who we've heard a ton about, who we've watched play a little bit and has been intriguing. He's also been a workout warrior, apparently, this offseason. He's got to start to deliver on some of the promise of his talent, some of his athleticism. He's got to play a key role. And then there's also Mone Malifu, who we've liked at different times. He obviously had to sit out a year because of what I believe were academic issues. He was part of that class of linebackers with Pilott where, okay, these guys have some talent and ability, but just hasn't quite come together for him. He also needs to step up and into a bigger role this year. I think for me, the transfers here are they're key in that they provide depth. But in my ideal scenario, Jalen Woods, Donovan Pilott, and Mone Malifu are making it hard to start Samuel Mosigo at the mic. Like that, those three guys step up in a big way, because I feel a little bit more confident in them than Omosigo jumping from what was like kind of a secondary linebacker role for most of his career at Oklahoma to then being the starter and the guy in this year. And maybe that's just my familiarity with the other three players. But that's kind of my take on it right now.
Well, yeah, because there are two positions at interior linebacker and there's a good rotation that usually goes on. So I think this is heavily dependent on Jalen Woods, Donovan Pilott, and Mone Malifu. At least two of those guys becoming real players.
Yep.
I'd like to see all three, but at least two of them like starter level ability this year. I'm really worried about that linebacker. So we're generalizing. and it sounds negative because we're kind of just talking about,
we're picking on the negative stuff.
We're picking on the negative. I guess we should probably touch on, like you touched on receiver, but there's a lot to be pretty excited about too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Let's get the excitement flowing. Running back. They've got three seniors, all of whom could start, and all of whom could start and be pretty good running backs at this level. And then they've also got Carson Cox, who's a redshirt freshman who was a four-star out of high school, who in limited snaps last year was really, really intriguing. Running back's going to be, I would be surprised if it isn't good this year. I'll say that.
I'd be surprised if it isn't beyond good. This should be good, really good. With a decent offensive line, this should be a really good running backs group.
Receiver should be very, very good.
You're very high on the receivers.
Very high on the receivers. I really like Leland Smith. I've kind of come around to your belief on him that he might be the dude, but he's really good, and he was an explosive playmaker at San Jose State last year.
And he's huge.
He's huge. I really like Landon Ellis as a possession guy. I think he's got a ton of ability. I think he's a lot better than a JMU level receiver. And I really like Brian Rowe. I watched more of him.
Bob Chesney.
Yeah, he does. I watched more of him this offseason while we were kind of getting ready for spring. And it's really quick. Really quick. I like him to start in the slot. Aiden Mizell, if he stays healthy, has that burner potential. And then there's just a lot of decent depth. Like, I'm not in love with Samaj Morgan, but I kind of like him as your, like, second or third slot receiver. Like, if he's your ninth guy or whatever in your receiver rotation, I like that just fine.
He was in the rotation at Michigan.
Yeah, well, he was often a starter. He would
be in the rotation at UCLA.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Mikey Matthews. If you tell me he's your fifth or sixth best receiver, then I'm feeling pretty good about your receiving core. Yeah. And there's guys in this depth chart where I'm okay. We don't typically say that like freshmen are ruled out from starting, but or from playing, but like there are some freshmen in here where they're gonna have a hard time getting snaps, who I think have a lot of talent. Like Kenneth Moore, he's gonna be a good receiver in his UCLA career or in his college career. But he might not get many snaps in this group. I don't know. I look at this and I see a major upgrade over last year. And last year, you know, they had dipped in depth, but I actually didn't mind the top end of that, receiving core. This year's, I think, is significantly better than that. And I think, again, if you pair it with better offensive line play, because I think we would both agree, the offensive line will be better next year. It's just a question of whether it'll be good, because it's hard to be a whole lot worse than they were last year. Better offensive line play gives Nico a little bit more time to throw the ball, gives these guys a little bit more time to make their routes work. I think the result could be pretty impressive. And that's just on offense. On defense, I think there's a lot to be excited about. I kind of like the edge group, but the secondary, and I haven't got, I'm 2 days away from doing this preview, but the secondary is potentially really, really good, particularly at safety. They went and retained their best players at safety, and that is Cole Martin and Scooter Jackson. But then they also brought in Teo Johnson from Utah, who was a full-time starter there and really good. They brought in Tashawn James, who was a mostly starter at Iowa State and was really good. And they also brought in Malik Hartford, who's got a lot of potential as a, you know, as a former highly regarded prospect who unfortunately played on the same team as Caleb Downs. And then at nickel, DJ Barksdale, who was a starter and an award winner at JMU. He'll probably be backing up this year. So safety is really good. And then at cornerback, you return Roger Pleasant, which is really the only thing I care about. But once again, as we talked about, Demetrius Martin did some great work stocking that depth chart with a lot of guys who can play. And those guys all, and this is another credit to Demetrius Martin and maybe those players, they all stayed more or less. None of these guys followed Demetrius to his new stop. I think he's at Arizona now. Is that right? or ASU. Yeah. None of them followed him. And so, you know, we've heard some good things about Osiris Gilbert, the UConn transfer this offseason. There's some pieces here that I think are really intriguing. Again, Robert Stafford started some games last year. He's going to be in the depth chart still. Aaron Williams, you know, liked him briefly at different times last year. And then there are a few redshirt freshmen who were well-regarded out of high school. Kieran Jabari and Chase Coleman, LaRue Zamorano, who are all in this depth chart as well. So I'm pretty confident in the secondary. I feel decent about the edge rush. I think the pass defense is going to be okay. I think it's going to be whether or not they can stop the run.
Yeah, there we go. The only one we haven't, two, quarterback and tight end, really.
Yeah.
Tight end is, I mean, we'll just skim right over that. That's a mystery.
Total mystery. Sort of like defensive tackle, just doesn't matter as much.
Of course, this whole team is dependent on Nico Iamaleava having a good season, taking another step forward. And we've praised him quite a bit on the season that he had last year. Just showing the talent, the athleticism, the toughness. God. And I mean, just not toughness doesn't even capture it. The desire to keep coming back when you are going to get killed and injured, and he just kept coming back for more and had no qualms about tucking that ball and running and standing straight in the pocket and getting his head taken off. Playing when we thought he would be hurt, and for his NFL career, he might have sat out, and he didn't. Dave has pointed out a few times, all of that is good. That all translates to this coming season. His ability to be a little bit more accurate throwing the ball down the field is probably the next step. And you think, Dave, he might just naturally be able to do that if he had like a half a second more in the pocket. So, that's an exciting, you know, looking back on Nico when he got all that bad press with Tennessee, came to UCLA. I don't know if there's been a turnaround for us, and I think for UCLA fans, in our opinion of a player. I wouldn't say we were negative on Nico when he was going through that, but we were definitely had not come to a conclusion or evaluated him as a player or character or anything. And now what he showed us last year, we've really come around on him. And then you reported that out of the offseason workouts, Ty Diffenbach is looking solid as a potential backup.
Yeah, I've heard he's kind of impressed some people. So we'll see. I mean, I do want to like just caveat. We have to report stuff that we hear, right? And that's what you're paying us for. And so we're going to do that.
At this point right now, because we haven't seen them.
With evals, we generally have learned over the years, we got to see these guys ourselves. I don't want to go too strong on a guy and then have it be, well, I mean, come on, we're just talking ourselves into somebody. So, you know, we're not always right either. You know, we want to be able to look and say, oh, yes, or oh, no, or okay, fine, I can see it. We'll wait and see before we go too strong on that. But yes, that's some of the buzz from the offseason is that Ty Diefenbach has looked like a potential, you know, pretty good backup.
So there you go. I mean, we'll get emails if we don't mention the specialists. I think they're in a good place. Mateen Bagani comes back. It was a very solid to good field goal kicker. Punter will be interesting. They've got the transfer, Curtis Durand. But the long snapper came back, Salim Abdul-Wahab, who was good last year. He went in the transfer portal and he's come back. So that was kind of key also. And then, of course, the kickoff and punt returners, TBD.
TBD. All right, what a good way to end it with punters and kickers.
Yeah, there you go. Very exciting, those specialists.
Yes. All right. Well, that is all for us, my friends. We will be back again next week talking our observations from the first day of spring football, which will be on Thursday. We'll record on Friday. And hopefully some more basketball news has started to trickle out by then. But for Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods. Brew & Report Online, and we'll talk to you again next time.
We'll see y'all.